Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Mitali Saxena, founder of Fashion. Great to have you on, Mitali.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be on it. We have an awesome midweek, I guess. It's Wednesday today, right? Yeah.
It's Wednesday.
Hope everyone's doing well.
Good. Before we start on this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Mitali. Just to start us off, Mitali, tell us about yourself and your professional background.
Sure. So I have a technical background, believe it or not. I don't look like it. I look like I'm probably from the fashion field, but I am not. I started off my career, actually, my education in engineering. I am a computer engineer. My bachelor's in computer engineering and my master's is in electrical engineering. I did start an MBA and I dropped out of school because it was just, I didn't see the ROI. I instead started my own business to learn business. In terms of profession, I jumped fields. I was actually working in the field of telecommunications, wireless communications, in fact, for about 8 years. And then I had a vision for something in the space of fashion, which we will talk about. And for the last 5 years, I've been doing what I've been doing. My company is called Fashion, and we use AI and ML to find clothing for women based on their body shape. And our mission is, which is why I made the switch, is to promote self-love and body positivity for women.
Good. I want to follow up on something you mentioned there. So you said you started college and you dropped out, I believe, of grad school.
At what point... grad school, my MBA. I did my electrical engineering.
Got it. So at what point during this process did you decide, I don't feel like this is for me, I'm better off just going, you know, doing my venture? Because what I'm seeing today is a lot of companies are starting to relax their requirements for a college degree, you know, for example. And I'm just curious to know, from your point of view, when did that hit you and why did you decide to do that?
Sure. It was the first semester. Cost was one of the reasons, I would say. I was, you know, trying to contemplate whether it's worth it to spend that much money. And I mean, I just didn't want just a degree. I was also looking for, you know, one of the top leading schools in business. Right. And apart from education, I guess, like I said, it was more of an ROI question. If I spend that much money, what am I going to get out of it? And I was just not seeing the value, I guess. I was seeing more value in doing and getting hands-on experience from my business than actual, like, sitting in a classroom and getting a degree.
Wonderful. I've been doing some research on Web3 fashion and what it actually entails. Could you please describe to us, in your own way, what is Web3 fashion and what objectives your company is setting out to achieve?
Sure. So just to begin with the whole Web3 terminology, right? So what we've seen in the past, Web1 was, you know, you could only read. Internet was about reading only. You know, you search for something and you get information out. And Web2 came out when, you know, the whole blogging culture and social media, where you could actually upload content, you could create content, you could comment, all that stuff was on Web2. And now coming on to Web3, which is on the blockchain, it's something that I guess our world hasn't completely accepted it yet, for one. And you know, I know that, you know, there's been a lot of buzz around it. There's also a little bit of FOMO, I would say, because everyone's talking about it. In terms of usability in the fashion space, what we are trying to do, we're not trying to rush brands, to be honest. So my new company that I'm establishing is called X Fashion, which is like an extended version of Fashion. And the reason why this was created is because from my past experience, I saw these brands that we carry with my other company, Fashion, they wanted to get on the metaverse. Like, you know, the whole buzz about Nike being on the metaverse, Gucci being on the metaverse, and they didn't understand the whole concept of what it means to be there.
Right.
So fashion and NFT and the Web3 world, the way I'm envisioning my company, my future company, and the fashion industry going forward is more on the digital world, meaning you have the digital content and the physical good, because for fashion, it's also a touch and feel, right? You can't just take away our clothes and just be on the metaverse with digital clothing. So it has to be a combination of the two. And that's where I feel that there has to be more education, I guess, on how to combine the two.
Absolutely.
And that's where we come in. Yeah, so as a fashion tech founder, what we're working on is actually educating a lot of brands to understand what it means to be on Web3, meaning, yes, you do have the physical goods, but maybe, you know, you don't produce thousands of quantities of that. Maybe do a collectible, you know, 100 items, and that goes onto the digital platform as Web3, which is authenticated by the blockchain. And the owners get one physical item and one digital good. That way, there's also sustainability. Like, you know, you're not spending so much money on producing, mass producing stuff that's going to go waste. And, you know, there's the whole digital angle where people can go to the metaverse, meaning Decentraland, Sandbox, or, you know, Roblox, for example. The kids are all on there buying Nike shoes. So all of that platforms coming together in the space of fashion.
I actually have an account on Decentraland, and the reason I created that is just, again, to gain more research and understanding on how the metaverse works. And I'm still in the process of figuring that out. One thing you did mention was that you're trying to educate companies on how they can, you know, coexist with Web3. How do you go about providing this education? Do you do like webinars? Do you consult with them?
Right, we do in-person consultation. Webinars are good when you're trying to do it for the clientele, I guess the user base, which we've done for our own user base and for theirs. But when it comes to, you know, old, set in their ways brands, which is the case with at least with luxury brands, you know, they're not the cool kinds, they're not young, they've been there in the business for a very long time, they don't understand the whole process of digitizing their physical goods, because they're really good at creation. Like, you know, you see in New York Fashion Week, everything's like physical goods. They've now started doing digital fashion, but not everyone's on board. So yes, in person definitely helps. So yeah, we go in there, and when we try and talk to them, and you know, the usability function of NFT is very important. Like, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like a person, so for example, you know, a brand comes to us and they're like, okay, now I'm creating an NFT, but what's our long-term vision? Like, do we give them something that they can hold on to later on? Like, if I'm buying an NFT for a luxury brand for $1,500, what am I using it for? Just to get the physical good, or if there's more perks to it? So that's where we come in, and we try and see if there are more things that we could add. For example, they could get, you know, the first come in advantage for a new collection that comes in, or a sale item that goes on, or even in the design process, like having perks around owning the NFT gives more advantage to the brand and to the clients, because they feel they are part of the brand. And, you know, to be honest, this whole NFT concept, there are different advantages to it. One of them is the social worth, like the whole ecosystem that builds around community of users, bringing people together in some way, is a very big usability function of NFTs.
This is actually a perfect segue to my next question.
Sure.
People always say they don't understand NFTs, and some even go further saying that it will fail. As someone who's very knowledgeable in that field, could you describe NFT in layman's terms and explain why you believe it has a strong future?
Sure. I mean, it's just like the stock market, right? Did people stop buying stocks even if they crashed? Not really. So no. Again, it comes back to being on board with everything. So imagine Facebook or anything else, and we can talk about, you know, technologies that have changed, but not everyone came on board on day one. So it's a little bit of the whole education part that goes along with it, and making people understand what is the advantage of owning an NFT, for example. So for NFTs, in terms of benefits, there's lots of, you know, there's a plethora of benefits, I would say. There's ownership rights to creators, right? So if you can't just copy paste an image and put it somewhere, because it's saved on the blockchain. So there's authentication. You make sure that a digital artist is actually protected. Their rights are protected. You can't just copy them. That's a big advantage. And then there's, like, you know, like I was saying, there's advantage of giving perks. Like, there's utility functions. You can give them access to like cool parties. I know Miami had this like last at Basel. Access was given to certain parties or galleries based on the NFTs they own. So imagine you buy an NFT, you get the piece of art, but you also get like a ticket to go to Paris and have the viewing of that real art, like in physical world. So it's got so many lucrative features that people may or may not see it right now, but obviously this trend is growing and it will continue to grow. Apart from it being like on a long-term basis, it having value perks because it's also an investment. You know, you own someone's art, and just like you own physical art and the value can increase, the same way digital art works, right? You know, you could buy an NFT today and you could sell it for $1 million tomorrow. That's happened.
Right, supply and demand.
Supply and demand, exactly.
Yeah. I want to talk about your company. So the use of AI in the fashion industry is expanding as the technology is revolutionizing how design, production, and marketing are being conducted, just to name a few. How have you been able to apply AI, and I believe you did mention machine learning as well, to the work that you do at Fashion?
Sure. So again, this goes back to my technical background, which came in really handy, combined with, I guess, things that I learned through on job with my business. So everything in my company from day one was data related. So the first thing when our clients sign up, they have to fill out a form and we get about 20, 25 data points from there. Once we have that, you know, obviously from day one, it wasn't like the most robust AI engine, but as we started serving clients and getting more data, we've got, you know, more than 1 million data points now to work this engine. So things that we've developed internally is like inventory prediction. We can tell you how much to produce and what to get for which demographic. We can tell you clothing recommendations, not just based on style. So we can say, hey, you know, a lady from North Carolina, age 45, would like this. But we can also recommend the size and fit. Like, you know, don't give a peplum top to this lady, give her like an off-shoulder top to this person, things like that. We can recommend what size and fit to give them. We've used NLP, you know, natural language processing, to read reviews and figure out things between sessions. So for example, you come back again and you've already given me a review for, you know, all the things that you've purchased. But then if you purchase 50 things, I'm not going to have someone read manually. So we've got, you know, natural language processing working on that. So that's machine learning algorithms that run and feed back to the engine. We've done KPI dashboards. So since I'm concentrating a little bit more on my Web3 company, I had to make sure that everything in my previous company was automated. So everything, all the dashboards, everyone's KPIs are actually automated. So I just go in the morning and I check what's breaking, if it's anything's breaking or where people need my attention. Other than that, it's automated. We've increased efficiency. Like we've reduced the rate of returns just by building all these algorithms. So the whole supply chain process and packaging and returns has reduced by more than 50%, just making sure that our data engine is working well, which also includes like demand prediction, by the way. So I was able to create with the team, obviously not just me, but we were able to create prediction models based on marketing channels. So we know it's not like 100% accurate because, you know, there's organic growth involved, but we can predict, hey, this month we might need, you know, more of Excels than smalls, things like that. So we are able to predict all that stuff as well using AI models.
That's very intriguing. One of the things that you talked about was the data points that you collect whenever you sign up a new client. Now, does this slow down the process of onboarding a new client, or is this just a necessary evil for something that will benefit them long-term?
I don't think it slows them down. I think people like to offload that information and have someone else figure things out for them. So they might not be the best communicator. So the challenge is to ask the right questions. But once you have those questions, and you know, some of the things that they say, we don't really, take it as like a black and white thing. We take it as a little bit of a gray area and then match it. So there are multiple ways of figuring out a person's body shape, for example. If she says she's a size medium and she's a size 10 on the bottom, doesn't necessarily translate into a particular body shape. So that's where the whole algorithm portion comes in.
Wonderful. All right. So Meta recently launched an avatar store and partnered with luxury fashion brands such as Balenciaga and Prada, so customers can dress their avatars in designer outfits. this just shows you the time we live in. What are your thoughts on this? Is this something that will gain popularity, or will it only be confined to a small subset of users within the metaverse?
For now, I think it's going to be a little bit of a challenge to onboard more users to the metaverse. I mean, you and I have dabbled into it, but do we use it every day? No, because, you know, there's not enough traction on these platforms. So I would go back to the analogy where, you know, in the not even the analogy, it's a fact that, you know, when Facebook first came out, it was just for college kids, right? We were on there because we got an invite, and our moms or grandmoms never thought that they would be posting their pictures or talking to their friends on there. But now if you look back, now you look at Facebook, we are not on there. It's all our grandmoms, you know, it's all shifted. Older with, right? So it's the same thing. It's just a matter of time on onboarding people onto something new.
Good. You're also a founder of a nonprofit called Foodom. I know that this is something passionate to you. So explain to us what Foodom does and how our listeners can engage or help in any way.
Oh, absolutely. So Foodom came about more than 10 years ago, I would say. The reason being, I started looking into, well, I was supporting a few charities in the past, but the major issue that I found with most charities is that 90% of my money went to the organization and only 10% actually went to the cause. So I'm like, I'm pretty much paying salaries for people. I understand their organization costs, but there has to be a better way of channeling my money's worth to people who actually need it. So I tied up with a couple of girls who were doing a PhD project actually in Swaziland, in a village in Swaziland. And they were doing more on the nutrition side, trying to figure out how they can work with the poverty situation. And Foodom has tied up with a village in Swaziland. And what we do is we provide food for the kids in the school. So what we notice that even though you can educate kids, you can force them to come to the school, but if they don't have food, they don't have the power to even walk to the school, how are they going to make it? Like, how are they going to even come to walk to the school to get educated? So in these schools, we try and provide them as, you know, at least one meal a day that they can come to school and they can eat and then go back home. Some of the kids who are orphans, they also get like food packaged and they send back to them, to their house. Uh-huh. Eventually, you know, we wanted to expand. And so something that we worked on together is that we started growing vegetables, for example, in their premises. So we said, okay, the school has so much land. Why don't we just start growing things there instead of getting it from some other place? And that way we also gave employment to local communities. So they grow the vegetables, the school gets it. And then we just need to get the non-perishable stuff from the market and give it to them. So it became like a self-sustaining economy inside of a village.
That's good. And how is that progressing today? You say you're trying to expand. Are you trying to expand within Swaziland or other countries?
Right now, just Swaziland. But I'm open to opening it in other countries if anyone's interested who's listening to this call and wants help in creating the self-sustaining economy within villages where people need us. Yes, I'd be open to it for sure.
That's great. And for our listeners who don't know where Swaziland is, it's in Southern Africa. I haven't been there, but I know some people will be wondering where that is located on the map.
Yeah, it's pretty hidden out there. But I mean, the life expectancy last I checked was 14 years in that little part of the village. So
yeah, and thank you, by the way, for what you're doing. That's significantly important for humanity, for people like yourself and your foundation doing this help others that are less fortunate. Last question. What has helped you to get to where you are? And what word of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's similar to yours?
Sure. I think it was following a cause in my mind or in my heart and just being resilient towards it. My cause was the fashion industry tarnished by size zero models and looking in a certain way to be on these platforms. That was my cause. I felt like, you know, the whole fashion industry was only focused on looking a certain way. And I wanted to break through that. And my vision was to make women feel their best versions in their body types, doesn't matter what their sizes were or what their body shapes were. And keeping at it was the hardest challenge I would feel that, you know, you have setbacks as entrepreneurs. I'm sure you've felt that too, Fred, because, you know, entrepreneurial journey is not like a straight line.
Not for everybody.
It's got a lot of ups and downs, and you have to be, you know, you have to have a resilient mindset. You need to know when to come up when you're down. The other thing that I've, you know, learned this on a personal journey is I've been meditating and I've been very mindful. So I brought that into the company. I made sure that, you know, we all were treated equally. There's always been like a balance of, there's no power, you know, in my company. Like there's no CEO, there's no like chief of operations, anything. We all operate on the same level. In fact, my title is not even, my title is as a CEO is chief entertainment officer.
That's a good title. We all need entertainment.
Going through that, I mean, one of my mottos is like, you don't have to be serious to be taken seriously. So having fun in what you do is very, very important. And your motivator should not be money. I think that comes after if you actually love what you do. So that would be my advice. Follow your passion.
Wonderful. Thank you for being with us today, Mitali. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you for having me on here. It's amazing to see what you guys are doing. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.